How to Lie with Statistics podcast review by Antoinette,
Estefan,
and Raekwon.
All right, part one, chapters 1 through 3.
Chapter one talked about if your sample you're testing is large enough, you won't have to count them out, and you can look at it and be able to give a close guess. An example of that was given to us was having a barrel of beans of two colors, and you picking out a handful. The sample space, if the sample space is large enough, then your handful should be very close to the amount of any color beans that are in the barrel. Another example is the class of 24 of Yale, and how no one is sure of the base salary. They recorded after the graduation, and this example came from a sample because reason tells us that no one can get hold of a living member of the class of 24. Chapter pretty much is based on sample and being able to determine if you can find out the answer from looking at the data that's given.
Chapter 2 talked about averages. Pretty much what I got from it is that you still don't fully know what the exact data is unless you find out what type of average they're examining it from, which would be the mean, median, and mode. One example from the book, which is a quote, said, "The $15,000 figure I used when I wanted a big one is a mean, the arithmetic average of the incomes of all the families in the neighborhood. You get it by adding up all the incomes and dividing by the number there are. The smaller figure is the median, so it tells you that half the families in question have more than $3,500 a year and a half less." Pretty much, though the numbers may be bigger and range in different positions, it still means the same income. So pretty much, the $3,500 is the smallest number, while the $15,000 is the largest. However, they're still in the same range dash form. Averages are more common in numbers when it has to do with human characteristics, also known as the normal distribution.
Chapter three was a pretty interesting chapter. It talked about how companies can, they're not lying, but they are at the same time. But I mean, like, they use small samples and put those. All right, well, like in the book, the example was with the toothpaste, where they say, like the 27%, it helps, you know, protect the teeth or whatever, and the dentist or whatever recommend it. It's like in the commercials where you see, it'll say 4 out of 5 dentists recommend this toothpaste. Well, they probably only asked those 5 dentists. And, well, some people might, you know, try to think deeper and then say, oh, they asked a bunch of dentists, and it basically turned out to be 4 out of 5, like a ratio or whatever. Like every 5 dentists, 4 of them are going to recommend it. But, yeah, so it basically chapter 3 just talked about how using a small sample space, you can, you know, advertise the product and get away with it because you're not really lying. But you did use a small sample.
Chapter 4 talks about the exclusive use of psychological tests. In the chapter, they talk about how some tests can base how smart you are, and that it depends on how well you score on tests to see how intelligent you are. During the chapter, the author revealed that the intelligence test does not actually measure intelligence. It doesn't include many important features related to intelligence. The example of measuring the size of the cornfield tells us that each test comes with a percentage of probable error, and while doing, we see that when the kids took the test, the larger sample shows us that some kids score in the very high ranges, while other kids score more of an average score. The sample size is larger, that meaning that the bigger your test is, like the more kids you test, then your calculation, then your data will be more accurate. An example was how the amount of money Yale graduates earn a year, and that the income, and that you can't know the exact income they earn each year, and it depends on the job, not just the income.
Chapter 6 gives a description about how to lie with grants. They give examples on different type of companies that have used grants in a way to deceive what really is meant to be said. So in other words, it starts off by showing a full graph. It's starting at 0 and going up to 24. This is for $1 billion, by the way. It starts at 0, goes up to 24, and it goes all the way over to the month of December. So what it shows is, your 10% looks like 10%, an upward trend that is substantially but perhaps not overwhelming. In the next picture, they show what the graph looks like chopped off at the bottom, with the first numbers being 18. Another example of the graphs that they had was graphs with decimal points. When the decimal points are put in place, it shows how widely dramatic the graph becomes. So instead of the graph being from 20 to 24, it goes from 20.0, 20.2, 20.4, and et cetera, up to 22.2, which shows a different outcome of how the graph would look if the decimals weren't put into place.
In chapter 6, it basically focused on the one-dimensional picture as a kind or type of graph, you know, the pictorial graph. They tend to use a person or like a money bag or such to mean like a million to any amount of money or whatever the representation is. Normally these graphs are, you know, very eye-popping. They catch the reader's attention, you know, very quickly. And for whatever reason, people love looking at graphs. So using a graph for them is super effective. And given as there is no, you know, additional information mentioned, when people see that picture and see that this group of people or the person or whatever represents, you know, X amount of money, you can use that to compare to the next amount. So say there's a group, say there's like two people, that each person represents a million, or, well, better yet, 2 million. So if you have a total of 4 million, and their income is, say six, well, it's a six figure income or whatever it could be, and that second group, it's 1.5 people, and they have the same income. So with no, you know, additional information mentioned there, you can just tell based off of what the graph shows you that the people in the first group combined are richer than the people in the second group.